Tuesday, October 24th, the Chinese Communist Party elevated President Xi Jinping to the status of party leaders Mao Zedong and Deng Xiaoping. WOOC correspondent Aaron Pedinati sat down with Jenny Day, a professor of East Asian history at Skidmore College, to discuss the significance of this event and the way it was covered in the Chinese media.
I'm Aaron Pedinati, and today I'm interviewing Jenny Day, who teaches East Asian history at Skidmore College. Professor Day holds a PhD in history from the University of California, San Diego, and is an expert in several interrelated areas, including the history of East Asian civilization, modern Chinese and Japanese history, Chinese intellectual history, East-West interactions, and the history of media and communication in East Asia. Today we're going to talk about the Chinese Communist Party's recent elevation of President Xi Jinping to Mao-like status by the Chinese Communist Party. Jenny's going to give us her sense of what this elevation means within the framework of Chinese politics. We'll also talk about how stories of this magnitude are covered by the Chinese media and how such coverage is affected by the relationship between the media and the state and the People's Republic of China. Jenny, I want to thank you for sitting down for this interview today. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So before we get to the elevation of President Xi, I want to start out by asking you a few more basic questions about the media in China. When Americans think about public communication in the People's Republic, they often envision a system of tight controls on information in which the Chinese government directly controls and produces the messages put out by major mass media, including the content of television news and newspapers. Can you give us a sense of whether this is an accurate take on the Chinese media system? Is it directly controlled and directed by state agencies, or are other parties primarily involved in media production? Is Chinese media public or private enterprise?
Well, first of all, I think that your assessment or the impression is generally true in the Maoist period, but not after 1978, although I think it varies depending on the timing, the nature of the news, and the type of the media. Following China's entrance into the WTO in 2001, there was a period of relaxation, but around the 2008 Olympics, I think that's when we see state control tightening drastically, and that level has only increased ever since. Currently, we are looking at a window where the level of control is extremely tight due to the 19th Congress. I think the rule of thumb is this. For news in sensitive areas, issues touching on the legitimacy of the government and the fundamental interests of China, the party likes to issue so-called general copies through the New China News Agency, the Xinhua She. And it is understood that these general copies would be the official version of the story. But I think for the most part, censorship responsibility is quite dispersed, localized and internalized. We're not really looking at a huge government apparatus censoring everything that's published. Now, I think that the internet might be an exception there. And so I think it's right to say that the party seeks ideological domination rather than total control. But I think it's also worth noting that media control has also a differentiated nature, by which I mean not everyone has the same access to the same materials. For example, the urban upper middle class, or employees for transnational companies within China, they often have greater access to Western news channels and websites. Hotels rated at 3 stars and above, they provide free access to almost any major news channel in the world within China. And so the party does not attempt to impose a North Korean, style total blockage with the understanding that it doesn't really benefit it from having a population that is totally isolated from and ignorant about the outside world. What it tries to do instead is to construct and shape an information order, which will be conducive to its interests.
And with the issue of public or private, is the Chinese media system a publicly funded enterprise or is it a privately funded enterprise?
I would say that with very few exceptions, the party does not permit private ownership of media companies. And so it is the government. It's the government on different levels, the central, the provincial, the municipal level, who owns the government. And in terms of funding, one of the most important changes brought by the reform movement beginning in the late 1970s was that the government was no longer responsible for funding mass media, which had been the case in the Maoist period. And so instead, each company is told that it's responsible for its own revenue. And so I would say that advertisement probably takes up the lion's share in revenue. The appearances of TV commercials in China tend to be much more intrusive than what we're used to in the States. But there's also something called strategic alliances. For example, a media company could transfer advertising or distribution rights or even the right to publish content to another company, say an insurance company or a pharmaceutical company, for a period of time, a year or longer, in exchange for their investments. In addition, there is a high degree of transnational capital integration through foreign advertisement, foreign investment, and copyright collaboration.
So you're talking about publicly owned corporations that deal with private funds through advertising.
Exactly.
Okay, so when a huge story like the elevation of President Xi is reported on by the media in China, how does the government ensure that it's covered in a way that lines up with its agendas and interests?
Okay, so this is somewhat different. For something like the elevation of Xi, there has been a long period of preparation to get the public to endorse Xi. And he has been the general secretary since 2013, and he has exerted a paramount influence over nearly everything. And so for years, the public has been fed a steadily expanding diet of Xi-related news, telling them that he enjoys, for example, absolute support by the military, the business class, the farmers, the urban class, the ethnic minorities, and, of course, foreign communities. And so for news of this nature, you could bet that the party will have spent years laying down the necessary propaganda and ideological framework to make that transition seem natural and inevitable. And so there's absolutely no room for deviation from the central line.
So would it be fair to say that the concept of breaking news is somewhat foreign to the Chinese media system? In other words, would it be accurate to say that controlling the overall course of political events, the state doesn't need to prevent news from becoming unpredictable because it can impose a sort of preemptive spin on how it's covered?
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. The Chinese government does not like breaking news of a genuine nature. When, for example, 9/11 happened, the CCTV was extremely ill-prepared for it, and it had to follow American rhetoric in its coverage of the event because it didn't really know what to say. And it ended up losing its audience to the Hong Kong-based Phoenix TV, and eventually it resulted in the creation of a new 24-hour CCTV channel covering international news as a result of that. But the government has also come to understand that breaking news on a limited scale is what sells. It's what people like to get. And so small-scale, localized breaking news, especially if they line up with the party's anti-corruption campaigns or environmental campaigns, are welcome, and you see it all the time.
So can you tell us about the recent elevation of President Xi and what it means in a practical sense? From what I read about it, it seems to signify ideas about the future direction of Chinese communism and how they're going to be assessed, how he's going to be assessed on the same level as Chairman Mao and Deng Xiaoping. But the practical implications of this sort of boost in status can be somewhat hard to read. What does this translate into in terms of state policy and for the Communist Party's vision of the future for China?
Okay, that's a great question. This new vision is laid out in Xi's 3.5-hour long speech to the Congress. It is very ambitious, and he had a whole team which worked on it for more than a year. But my sense is that this should be understood as a political act more than a specific blueprint for state policies. One way to understand this vision is to think about it in the context of the Maoist and the post-Maoist policies. Now, we all know that Mao, his incessant campaigns from the early 1950s onward, especially his last mass campaign known as the Cultural Revolution, had completely demoralized every sector of the population and exhausted their energy. The party apparatus was nearly destroyed by the Cultural Revolution. And so when Deng Xiaoping came to power in the late 1970s, he went ahead and he shelved Mao's radical vision, and instead he used material incentives to re-energize the society and the party. And the party promised to modernize the country and make its people wealthy, and that was the new mandate. Well, the problem that came with it was rampant corruption on all levels. China became infinitely more wealthy, but also infinitely more unequal. So Deng had this famous slogan, to get rich is glorious. And people got the impression that, you know, very often it tends to be the party members who got rich first. And so in the eyes of the masses, in the eyes of the people, the party has been losing its ideological grip and its image. And it was widely rumored that corruption was going to be the death of the party in just a couple decades. And there were these estimates on when the party is going to go down. And so one way to understand what Xi is trying to do is to look at the anti-corruption campaigns that he's waged since, 2013. This was an unprecedented attempt that targeted both the highest and the lowest levels of the party. And this was his attempt at furnishing the party with a new public image, a new moral cause, and a new sense of mission. I think that, international leadership was very much part of that. And Xi's vision is about providing a sort of a new grounding beyond, Deng's material incentives to re-legitimize the leadership of the party in the eyes of the people. And so that's my interpretation of, what the elevation of his thought is really meant to do. Is it has more to do with re-establishing the legitimacy of the party than anything else.
And what does that mean for capitalism versus communism? If Mao was the extreme of communism and then Deng was opening up China to capitalist reforms and laying the groundwork for a lot of what we see today, mm-hmm. where would he stand on this?
Well,
spectrum?
I think that in terms of actual, market policies, he's going to keep pushing for reform along the Deng lines. But at the same time, he's also telling the people that the party is no longer going to, continue with its corruption.
Okay. Well, Jenny, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. We really appreciated the opportunity to talk to you and get your highly informed opinion on this very significant story.
Thank you so much.
That was WOOC correspondent Aaron Pedinati speaking with Jenny Day, professor of East Asian history at Skidmore College.